New research has found that nitrous oxide emissions are a more powerful climate warming agent than carbon dioxide and are jeopardising the Earth's future. Nitrous oxide from agriculture and other sources is accumulating in the atmosphere so quickly that it puts the Earth on a dangerous track for a 3 degrees centigrade warming this century, according to the research. To find out more, I'm speaking to Pep Cannadil, a chief research scientist in CSIRO Oceans and Atmosphere and the executive director of the Global Carbon Project. Welcome, Pep.
Welcome. My pleasure.
How do the climate effects from nitrous oxide compare to those from the well-known causes such as carbon dioxide and methane?
So nitrous oxide is the third most important after, as you said, the super most important, which is carbon dioxide, and methane. And I think that what's important to understand is that even if it's the third most important and it accounts for about only 7% of the total global warming that has occurred so far, the important thing is that it's one more gas that we need to deal. It is one more gas that we haven't been speaking much about it so far. And we're trying just to raise its attention. And I think that, you know, that the study presented really shows that it's growing actually faster than what we, you know, thought that would be, will be happening, and therefore, you know, of a bigger concern than what we thought.
Is it just the case that the climate effects of nitrous oxide were already known and that the new research just quantified it more accurately?
Yes. So it is the complexity of the what we call the nitrous oxide cycle or budget, where there are many sources and sinks. Sources means that, you know, emissions into the atmosphere and therefore accumulation there. And then sinks, these are the way the gases ultimately get destroyed and removed from the atmosphere. And we have both. We have we have natural sources, which they are there, and we need to study very carefully to understand that whether they are changing or not, for instance, in response to climate. And then there is the real culprit of the increase in emissions in the atmosphere, which is all the sources that come from human activities. And as you said, the main one, agriculture, you know, these are the chemical fertilizers and the manure used for increasing productivity of our crops. And then there's a component of the industry. So, you know, through these major partnerships globally, you know, more than 45 institutions, research institutions around the world, we were able to put absolutely every single piece of data that existed, both observations and measurements, and a huge modeling capability to be able to estimate the fluxes from the ocean, from the fresh waters, from the land, the soils, the forests, and the agricultural fields around the world, and then understand what's happening in the atmosphere and how that nitrous oxide ultimately gets destroyed. And so what we presented is probably the most comprehensive ever assessment of what we call the budget, that is all these sources and things of N2O nitrous oxide.
So given the depth and breadth of your research, were there any surprising results?
Well, we learned a lot of things that we kind of didn't know enough. I mean, first of all, we quantify a relatively large flux from the ocean. And part of the reason why the oceans are emitting nitrous oxide is because we put in so much emissions from, you know, from the fertilizers into the atmosphere, that some of them, they get rain on top of the ocean later on. And then the ocean, you know, runs microbial processes, which kind of emit nitrous oxide back to the atmosphere. We also learned that deforestation in the tropics actually kind of diminishes the amount of nitrous oxide. And that's because, you know, you open up the forests, which are very humid, very rich in organic matter, which when they decompose, they also emit nitrous oxide. And we also kind of learned a little more than what we knew from before. It's all the emissions that come from the rivers and lakes, particularly in agricultural regions around the world, and including a small pond, which is a big issue in Australia. There are tens of thousands of small ponds, you know, in Australia, farm ponds, which they accumulate a lot of organic matter, and then they emit nitrous oxides too.
So you've pretty much covered where it comes from. What's the comparison between natural and man-made sources in terms of scale?
Yeah, so in terms of the overall fluxes, you know, how much nitrous oxide is going to the atmosphere, about 60% comes from the natural world, forests, soils, oceans, and so on. And 40% comes from human activities. But what's important and what we found in the study is that overall, the natural sources, emissions of N2O are not changing, and they have not changed over the last 40 years. But when we look at the sources from anthropogenic activities, from human activities, then we see that there is a very rapid increase of those emissions, with, you know, more than 30% over the last 30 years.
So what is the variation of that output of nitrous oxide around the globe, and why does it vary?
Yeah, so first of all, the natural components, of course, they vary a lot. There's nothing we can do. So yes, in the tropics, there's a big sources of nitrous oxides, but that's what it is. And that doesn't affect the climate. These sources have been always there, and they were in equilibrium with the atmosphere. That is, you emit sources and they stay in the atmosphere for some time, and then they get destroyed, and then it's a cycle. It was not causing climate change. But the human ones are where we see the hot spots, which are truly contributing to increase the concentrations of nitrous oxide in the atmosphere. And some of these hot spots are in East Asia, particularly in China, also in South Asia, particularly in India, and also in South America, particularly in Brazil. And what we find is that the sources of those nitrous oxides are quite different depending where you are. If you're in China, they're mostly coming from chemical fertilizers. If you're in Brazil, they mostly come from the increase of livestock and therefore manure emissions, or emissions from manure from the livestock. Out of all, let's say, human activities, agriculture is about 70% of all the increase that we're seeing. The rest comes from some industries burning fossil fuels and wastewater. So water that also has a lot of organic matter and also kind of decomposes, and nitrous oxides are emitted. So from industry, you know, there's less and less industry that kind of emits nitrous oxide. We had the production of nylon, which doesn't take place in Australia, but it takes place in the US, Europe, Japan, and China. There were huge emitters of nitrous oxides in the past, and a number of catalytic processors that they were able to develop got rid of most of those emissions. So we had that the industry has become less and less important as a human source of N2O, while agriculture has become bigger and bigger source of nitrous oxides, and therefore accumulation into the atmosphere, which is, of course, the ultimate concern because climate change.
So what are the best strategies to deal with the component of the major component that is agriculture and nitrous oxide?
Yeah, so the reason nitrous oxide is emitted is because there is excess amount of nitrogen in the soil, and in this case, in cropland. So if we look at globally, one could actually go to the big hotspots around the world, particularly those that they have excess use of nitrogen, and being able to improve what we call the nitrogen use efficiency, a big deal. That is, that with a certain amount of nitrogen, you can produce either much more crop than you used to, or the same amount of crop that you can produce, you need much less nitrogen. Therefore, you save money, and you avoid all these environmental impacts. It's important to remember that there's a big environmental impact at the end of the climate change chain of processes, which means that global warming, but also nitrous oxide, it's also a substance that destroys the ozone layer in the top of the atmosphere. And excess amount of nitrates also are major water polluter, and particularly of drinking water, in which many regions in less developing countries where large agriculture exists and excess use of nitrogen have major problems for drinking water. So there's many other, so in these parts of the world, you could see that one could try to do a more precise application of the nitrogen fertilizer, both in its quantities, in when you administer it into the plant, so when they need it the most, and in the right quantities. But in other parts of the world, and that would certainly include Australia, we can also do much better at this kind of more precision agriculture, in which we're trying to, you know, really administer the amount of nitrogen that plants can take, so that there is no much excess nitrogen in the soil that then gets taken away as a runoff into the water or into the atmosphere.
So you've been researching the increase in nitrous oxide. Has there been any research on the practical agricultural front about more efficient methods of agriculture that have a reduced input from nitrous oxide?
Yeah, no, there is indeed, there is this CSRO itself, but we have programs where are kind of focused on what we call precision agriculture, which really is about what I was just mentioning before, and really being able to very sharply being able to administer those amounts of nutrients when the plant needed the most, so that kind of minimizing any excess or nitrogen going outside of the system. There are also really interesting research. There are certain plants around the world, particularly in the tropics, where they have specific substances that they kind of try to, in the natural world, not in the in croplands, where they try to kind of stop the what's called the nitrification process that kind of leads to ammonia and nitrates, so that the plants can actually save the nitrogen for themselves and save the nitrogen to actually move away in runoff or into the atmosphere. So research has happened as to what extent even rotating crops, like the crop of our choice, then a crop of one of these plants that kind of minimize the loss of nitrogen, so that when the crop that is of your interest comes back later on, you have actually more nitrogen in the soil. Therefore, you need less nitrogen input from chemical fertilizers than you would have otherwise. So there's plenty of good ideas. Some are maybe a little expensive. Some they require a little more sophisticated agriculture. You know, all these things is being implemented in many parts of the world. And Europe has really shown how over the last 20 years they've been able to increase agricultural productivity. At the same time, nitrous oxide emissions have actually declined, and showing how regions can actually increase the nitrogen use efficiency so much, so that you can even still increase your yields, which is the ultimate goal, with a reduction of the impact in the atmosphere.
Could you describe the life cycle of nitrous oxide from its creation to its destruction?
Well, so, it starts with, we can start, from manure from cows, that they basically extracted the nitrogen from the plants in the first place. There are many plants that, of course, they extract the nitrogen straight from the atmosphere, and nitrogen in the atmosphere is the most abundant element, but it cannot be utilized directly unless you have very specific roots, you know, with the rhizobium, which is a bacteria that is able to utilize the nitrogen from the atmosphere and convert it into a form that is useful for plants. So from that point, it goes into the plant. That plant can go into a cow, for instance, and then manure from the cow, you know, can actually, as a concentration of nitrogen and organic matter in one place, you know, can also lead them to what's called a denitrification and nitrification processes, which takes you to nitrates and ammonia, and they can either be washed off into the water or converted into N2O nitrous oxides into the atmosphere. It goes into the atmosphere and it stays for 116 years on average. And ultimately, photochemical processes at the top, that is, you know, radiation from the sun, kind of supplies the energy to destroy ultimately that nitrous oxide in the very top of the atmosphere, the stratosphere, and that kind of goes back to a splitting molecules and nitrogen N2O returning to nitrogen to N in the atmosphere, which, as I said, is the most abundant element in the atmosphere.
Is there any international action taking place or plan to take place to deal with the problem?
Yeah, so there has been for many years a lot of interest to to do you know, better in terms of manage the nitrogen cycle, manage the nitrogen production and supply and use. But this is for the sake of climate change, so that is, and for the sake of reducing water pollution. But at the same time, this is, of course, competing with, you know, the objectives of many countries, if not all the countries of the world, to really secure ample supply and a steady of agricultural products, to have, you know, food security within the region. And, of course, one way that has been achieved through many agricultural improvements, which are a huge amount of research and development, is also by often providing subsidies for the use of nitrogen, because nitrogen, you know, as a whole, it helps to increase that productivity. And what we've seen is that a lot of farmers and corporations are not paying the real price of the fertilizer because of the subsidies, and often it's being kind of misused and abused, and part of it is an excess supply into the fields, which gets then run off into the waterways and emissions. But yes, there are plenty of programs out there, including Australia, where there's been a goal to achieve, you know, higher precision of the use of the nitrogen, reduction of nitrous oxides as part of mitigation strategies for climate change, and as part of, you know, saving money. So, you know, nitrogen production costs money, and farmers have to pay in the places that it's not subsidized, and therefore being able to do it with less, there's a better return at the farm level at the end of the process, which is good for the environment and good for the pocket.
You say that besides those actions that can be taken place, as you describe, there'll be a need for new technologies that'll bring emissions down.
Yes. Yeah, so when we look at, first of all, something that is really useful to actually make sure that your listeners know is that in order to stabilize the climate at a certain level, you know, and that's what the Paris Agreement is trying to do through the Convention on Climate Change of the United Nations, for which, of course, Australia is a signatory, we have to fundamentally stop all emissions of all sectors of our economy. That's really important. So we're not going to achieve stabilizing the climate at 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels or 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels, which are the two targets of the Paris Agreement, unless we completely stop. And there is an understanding that certain sources of emissions will be very difficult to stop. And nitrous oxide is one of those. You know, there's an understanding that we can do better. We can increase the efficiency in the way we use nitrogen. We can actually diminish. As I said, Europe has shown a reduction of emissions over the last 30 years. But we're still going to have always some nitrous oxide emissions coming from the production of food. And so one way that we need to begin to think about is, are there technologies that we could remove nitrous oxides directly from the atmosphere and destroy it? I mean, that's what has been already achieved with carbon dioxide. I mean, a tree removes carbon and kind of stores it in the trunks and soils. But we have now systems that they remove carbon dioxide straight from the atmosphere into a number of filters and chemical reactions, and then either use it for something or store it underground. So the idea is to what extent we can develop technologies for nitrous oxide. And at this point, there's actually no technologies available. There's some technologies that we've been exploring ourselves in the to remove methane from the atmosphere, but we're unsure that we can do the same with nitrous oxide. And one of the reasons is that nitrous oxide, it's at very low concentrations. It is at the level of hundreds of parts per billion in the atmosphere, as opposed to parts per mil in the CO2 concentrations, much, much higher concentrations. So it is kind of hard to think about how we would do it, which could be financially possible. And that's why it's so important that whatever emissions cannot be mitigated through better practices and better uses of nitrogen, that we do, you know, we minimize the maximum so that only a small amount of emissions are left, which probably would need to be removed through the removal of carbon dioxide instead, so that ultimately you achieve the same warming reduction if you remove another greenhouse gas instead, but you would need to be actively taking CO2 from the atmosphere to compensate those nitrous oxide emissions that we may never be able to kind of completely get rid of.